What do we know about the reliability of genomic assays like the recurrence score on core biopsies as opposed to surgical specimens?
There have been several studies looking at the use on core biopsies and comparing it to surgical specimens, and really they're highly concordant. We use Oncotype on core biopsies if we are trying to determine if a patient who may be a borderline candidate for breast conservation therapy, maybe a borderline candidate for chemotherapy, and we want to get some assessment of whether this is going to be a high-risk patient or a low-risk patient before going to the operating room, we will frequently get an Oncotype on the core. And if that patient is high risk, we will give them preoperative chemotherapy with the hopes that we will get some downstaging of the tumor and potentially the axilla, even though we know that we don't get a lot of pathologic complete responses in the ER-positive groups, you can still get some downstaging. And so if that patient has a high-risk recurrence score and she's going to receive chemotherapy, regardless, there's really no disadvantage to giving that to her in the preoperative setting and trying to get some secondary surgical benefit out of it. So we feel very comfortable using the Oncotype on the core biopsy.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. We did a survey a couple years ago, I think you were involved with it, of both investigators and medical oncologists. And actually, at that point, about a third of them were using specifically the recurrence score in select situations in the neoadjuvant setting. The rest weren't. But for those who were, I think, like, for example, a patient who needed shrinkage to have breast conservation, for example. And, you know, I guess the logic there was, you know, even though we don't maybe have as much data in the adjuvant setting, you know, as you said, if you see a high score, okay, that's one thing, you can give them chemo. But then the question is, what do you do if there's a low score? Would you give them neoadjuvant endocrine therapy? And again, I don't know that this represents the majority of investigators, but what do you think about that strategy?
So we consider the strategy quite often. As you said, neoadjuvant endocrine therapy is not as widely used as neoadjuvant chemotherapy, but we are seeing more attention being paid to it, both in clinical trials as well as in routine clinical practice. Again, you don't expect to get a pathologic complete response when you use neoadjuvant endocrine therapy, but you can get some downstaging or shrinkage of the tumor. The challenge is that, you know, it takes much longer. So both physicians and patients have to be willing to have 6 months of therapy and wait 6 months before going to surgical management. How to manage the axilla in that situation is also sort of a data-free zone. We don't have a lot of data on management of the axilla after neoadjuvant endocrine therapy, and people extrapolate from the neoadjuvant chemotherapy trials, but I'm not really sure that that is the best thing to do. But we are actually looking at this right now in our own patients, trying to gather some information and some data about management of both the breast and the axilla after neoadjuvant endocrine therapy.